Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler with Visit Myrtle Beach. I'm joined today, as ever, with DJ Jazzy Adam. How are you, DJ Jazzy Adam?
I am so good, and I appreciate that on our last episode, I was apparently Fresh Prince, or who was I, Will Smith? I can't remember what you said.
You were Fresh Prince, Adam. Yeah.
Yep, and so DJ Jazz, it only makes sense for this to be the next one. So
That's
I'm
right.
excited for when we get to know some rappers that actually had some larger success, but this is great for now.
Oh, wow. That is, you're throwing some
I mean,
shade,
listen,
man.
hey, if you're going to compare me, compare me to somebody on my level. You know what I mean?
You like a Tupac? Is that what you're thinking? Because
Now we're
that's
getting
probably
closer. We're
delusions
getting
of grandeur,
closer.
my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you'll just have to break out a few riffs and we'll see, you know, spit some bars and we'll see who you really compare to.
Well, you know what? Anything could happen.
Yeah. All right. Well, we have a great guest today, someone I recently met, but I know is very familiar with our team in Myrtle Beach, and that is the man with two names, John David, the president and CEO from Sports ETA. How are you, John?
Doing great. Happy to be here, Stuart and Adam. Thanks for letting me join.
Of course. And you sent us a really nice note after one of our recent episodes and said you were enjoying the show. You've already, in our preamble just a minute ago before we started recording, you've thrown down some knowledge that makes us, I mean, you are one of the original Desties of the Desti Nation. It sounds like you've been listening or watching the show for a while.
I do. I enjoy the conversation. You know, in my role, you know, I come from the national governing body side, and in sports, we call it the rights holder side. You know, so being out there and really learning, you know, more about the destination side, this has been one of my go-tos. And I just love the conversation. I love the back and forth and the way you guys present the information. I think it's a lot of what the industry needs. You know, Stuart, to your point, you know, you guys have definitely both said that oftentimes in this space, we just sit around and talk about how great we are. You know, and having that opportunity to really challenge conversation and have a little discourse, it's been fun. I enjoy the episodes every time I'm walking away with a note or two.
Well, great. Well, that means, Adam, what I heard, I don't know if you did, Adam, but we can totally pick on him today. We can tell him how wrong he is. Like he knows what he's getting into.
Yeah, I mean, he appreciates disagreement, so he should be fully prepared for what's coming.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Gosh, now I got to think of something to disagree with you on, John.
So, John, we're going to get into your topic in a minute. So I'm going to set the stage for it, then we're going to do Stu's News. But, you know, you came to us with a couple of studies that have been recently done. And I would say something that surprised me related to sports and the value of different types of sports tourism in your destination. So that's going to be the topic today. We don't have a title yet. We'll maybe make that up after we've had the full conversation. But I'm excited for you to dig into some data and to maybe share some things that maybe aren't conventional thinking. I think we might surprise a few people today. But before we get into that, Adam, are you ready?
Oh,
it is the greatest segment
ever.
In all of entertainment.
Ever.
Is it the country one? Did you fulfill your promise?
You know what? I haven't done that yet. I'm sorry.
You just good job letting our Desties down, man. Really
it's
good
coming.
Job.
It's coming. Okay. I want it to be done right.
Okay.
It doesn't get old for me, Stuart. Ever.
You might be the only one.
I don't know. Some of the reviews say different.
Yeah, I think they're just being polite. They don't want to hurt your feelings. John, what's your opinion on the jingle? Just
I'm
out of curiosity.
I'm a fan. The first time it came on, extra loud too. I was out there walking the dog on a jog. You know, I almost had to blast my
Fork
AirPods out. But I yeah. am, and I do find myself, because I do typically listen in the morning, like I'm making my lunch, you know, snooze, you know, so it's catchy.
Oh, this is Stuart's worst nightmare,
yeah,
John.
I might be in the minority.
I'm so glad you're here.
I just feel like people have lost all concept of taste. But talking of taste, Adam, I learned something about you today, this past week,
yep.
When we were talking about Stu's News, and you're super into thirst traps, apparently, because you want to share what Stu's News is today. This is your article you found.
Yeah, and I want you to know I appreciate your framing, because your framing really makes me look as good as possible, and that's always much appreciated.
That's my MO, my friend.
Yeah, so let me set the table a little bit. And honestly, if you're in the destination marketing space and you haven't seen this yet, I'm not sure where you've been, because over the last 2 weeks, I would say, the national parks, and I think it started with Yellowstone, but the national parks, and I don't think it's the official TikTok account, but they've sure made it look like the official TikTok account of the national parks. And they've gone completely unhinged. And, every single one starts with what I can only believe is an adult entertainer saying something relatively sensual, and then it skips to a scene from the national park from Yellowstone. And the amazing thing to me is this is essentially the lowest common denominator of content, right? Is like you're basically getting attention with something that I don't know. I mean, sex sells is the old adage that a lot of people talk about, and it's amazing how much attention these national park accounts have gotten as a result of incorporating these adult entertainers. I do think that it's the juxtaposition of the wholesomeness of national parks compared to the adult entertainer that they start with. I do want to say too that the adult entertainer that they've used primarily really resembles John David really closely. Like I for a second I was like, is that John? And no, it's not John.
Great.
Just kidding, John. But it's fascinating to me because it's not only has it gotten a ton of attention, but I've seen an incredible amount of content from creators talking about the content that they saw on the national parks. And first of all, we can talk about the story, but in no way am I suggesting that destinations need to start posting thirst traps. But I do think we need to dissect a little bit about what made this go viral and how can destinations duplicate this. And in fact, Stuart, I think it points a little bit to what you and I have been discussing over the last couple of weeks of a possible gap in how we've approached putting owned media at the center of a lot of different marketing strategies. And I think this illustrates why we may need to expand that philosophy a little bit, at least on the attention side, on the first interaction with a potential visitor. But I think this strategy demonstrates that well, actually, I don't want to steal your thunder because you're the one that kind of said a couple of these things to me, and I feel like I'd be regurgitating some of your philosophy. But why don't you share what your thoughts were around this idea of getting attention first before you try to get too deep into a story?
Getting someone's attention is probably the hardest part. We've created some phenomenal content and it doesn't always find an audience. And so we've struggled with this. And we had a project recently that we were been analyzing with your team too, where we had a whole bunch of structured, storied out, specific videos that we captured with a celebrity. And then we also, while we were recording that, picked up a couple of like lifestyle shots of them just being natural and hanging out with their family or their dog or whatever. And we published all this like highly produced content, and we also published a few just sort of snippets of real people doing real things that happened to be a celebrity. And that simple stuff outperformed the really curated stuff significantly, at least from an attention awareness perspective. Now, was it as persuasive or convey the right message? Probably not, right? But it's really gotten us thinking a lot about swinging the pendulum back or finding more of a balance between creative storytelling, which I absolutely think you have to do in that sort of consideration and impacting people's feelings, thoughts, and actions. But to initially get the first date with someone, to get their attention, I think back to basics might be the direction we're going on a lot of this stuff. And it is human nature, right? There are things that will appeal to people at a base level without any context. Sex is obviously one of those, but novelty is another one. There's others too. And I also think there's sort of this trend of, because of the sea of sameness of content that's on social media, I find myself getting sort of fatigued with it and not the dopamine hit isn't as big as it once was, right? And so when we see something that's out of left field is a little more unhinged. I mean, what, 6 months ago we saw the whole Nutter Butter phenomenon, right, on TikTok, where they just went extremely surreal with a lot of their stuff and it blew up for a while. sort of died down some since. But I'm wondering if that novel, the power of novelty and the power of like base level connection with humans is something that the DMO space hasn't really explored that much. It's certainly something we're going to be exploring.
Yeah,
So,
interesting.
yeah.
I want to hear John's take. I know, I feel bad because John here, he was excited to come on the show, and then we're essentially talking about, the weirdest story maybe that we have so far on Stu's News. So John, what do you think of all this?
Yeah, I think you guys kind of nailed it. And so when you say sea of sameness, I think marketers are going out there and they're looking for a shock factor, looking for a way to distinguish themselves and to get in front of the audience. And whether it's clickbait or whether it's thirst trap or whatever it may be, and it is fun to have this kind of conversation. It is great to talk about it in terms of destination marketing to say, hey, this is an example. May not be the best example. But it's an example, of people stepping out, doing something that's completely unorthodox and doing it, just to try to get out of that sea of sameness. So, not something we'd love to see in sports, but hey, maybe something a little different.
I will say, I think this was done by either a private citizen or entity, and the idea was actually to bring awareness to how some of the Trump policies have impacted national parks. That's, I believe, that was the impetus of this whole thing. And it also shows why, as long as a DMO operates just like a DMO in the rigid structure that's kind of been set forth, they don't have the freedom. I don't see, Stuart, you and your team posting that same kind of content, even though you're at the beach. I don't see you posting that same kind of content on your social channels because it would violate some of the brand standards and values that you've created. But what that means is you also have these boundaries that will keep you from being able to do what other people are doing to get attention. And that's why you've got to kind of blaze the trail and try something different and be first.
I think it's we actually had this conversation this morning with our team. It's really hard to be a content creator in a true sense as a DMO, right? We try to sort of emulate that, but if you look at the types of content creators that are successful, generally speaking, the personality of the individual is who the audience has the relationship with. The content is there and they're telling stories of sorts or focused on a specific thing. But without that individual or the people that are in it and having those connections, it's really hard. And for DMO, I could put my team in front of the camera and make them a star, but then I have the risk of turnover, employee turnover. I could contract that out, but then at some point someone's going to be like, it's just so successful that I'm going to go do this on my own. And maybe we bite the bullet and we just accept that. I don't know, but it's really hard for us to compete with true content creators for attention when we sort of hamstrung a little bit. And we're hamstrung in two directions. One is you already touched on, which is we have a brand standards. And I would look at that a different way. I'd say we also have a social contract with our audience, right? There's an expectation from our current fans, followers online that we don't want to breach that trust. But then we also have our other stakeholders. For us to go out and do something as unhinged as they were doing on these thirst trap videos would be political suicide for us, both from a career perspective for me individually, but also from a funding a risk of fund defunding kind of perspective. So, especially when you see what's going on in Florida and how the people are just looking for every excuse they can to defund, right? We don't want to give more ammunition. So it forces us into this sort of box of conservatism where we're not going to try stuff. But maybe there's alternative ways to do it, and maybe there's other things we can learn. One of the things I thought was there seemed to be a lot of copycats around doing that kind of stuff. And when you can hit to that level of the zeitgeist, I think that's always an interesting way to drive awareness. But you also touched on another challenge with it, which is the original message and purpose for why they did it got completely lost in the, shenanigans that ensued on social media. So yeah, it's complicated, but it was good to observe and sort of learn a few things from the phenomena. And I'm glad you follow that kind of content, Adam, because otherwise we wouldn't have seen this story.
Was only because I thought it was John for a second, and then I was stuck. I was captivated.
Yeah, I'm not going to pull that thread. So, John, let's jump into your topic. So, do you want to set the table a little bit
Sure.
with you know what it was you brought to our attention that you wanted to chat about today, and then we'll dig into that.
Yeah, with the Sports Events and Tourism Association, for anybody in the audience that's not familiar with who we are, we are the trade association of that wonderful intersection of sports, events, and tourism. We have over 500 destination members that are part of our organization, over 200 sports events rights holders from national governing bodies, USOPC, all the way down to mom and pop and boutique sporting events. And one of the, our core pillars is resource and research. And every other year with our partners at Tourism Economics, we do a great state of the industry report. And we were so excited when we launched the last report in 2024, which took a look at 22 and 23 data. And it's really about that participatory sports tourism. Myrtle Beach, Stuart, where you're at, one of the great leaders in sports tourism, does so many great events with Jonathan Paris and Taylor and the team. And that report every year takes that big measurement. And in 23 showed us that we had 52.2 million in direct spend, over $128 million, billion dollars in total economic impact. Well, as we're coming on to this decade, I call it the decade of awesomeness in sports. I mean, some of the greatest sporting events ever between
TM,
FIFA,
have you trademarked that?
I should. But coming here soon, one of the things that we wanted to really do that we haven't particularly done is also measure spectator sports tourism. It's in our ecosystem, but we really wanted to get ahead of the game and benchmark it to see and be able to measure. So, my friends at Tourism Economics, I think when I call, they're like, "What's he going to ask for now?" Because th that this I'd never proclaimed to be an economist. For the 24 report, we added a top 10 states in the United States, which was super challenging to try to do because I love rankings and systems. And I came to Greg Pepatine, who does our study for us with Tourism Economics, and said, "Okay, right now we're measuring, spectator sport or participatory sports tourism. It's the events that our members typically bid on and win and bring to their communities. I want to measure everything else." And he's like, "What's everything else?" I'm like, "I don't know. You tell me everything else, And I said, "I want to really focus on spectator sports tourism because our report, for instance, it doesn't cover college football, regular season games, because destinations aren't bidding on and winning those events. It does cover the championships or the playoff games that are moving because they're bid on and won, but it doesn't cover regular season. Doesn't cover Major League Baseball's regular season. Doesn't cover spring training. So it doesn't cover the NFL draft, which is a sports, centric event." So they went in and, man, did some absolute magic. And I think this is where the interesting thing comes in, Stuart, is going into the study, I fully anticipated these numbers to come out. And quite frankly, I thought they were going to come out and dwarf participatory sports tourism, youth and amateur. They didn't.
I did too. Honestly, I mean, when you think of the scale and the media coverage of every major sport in America, and we're talking domestic US, right? And so when we look at NFL and NBA and MLS, yes, that gets some participatory people and MLB. I mean, it's a lot, especially when you add the collegiate side in it. Like it seems a no-brainer, right? To me, it seems a no-brainer that the economic impact of that on destinations is far greater. I mean, I go to South Carolina Gamecock game 4 or 5 times a season, and there's 80,000 people in that stadium, most of whom aren't living in Columbia, So I'm just thinking, how much money is that bringing into Columbia, South Carolina every Saturday for a home game, So anyway, that was my assumption and yours too.
There's no question that it is tremendous. And when I got the draft of the report, I'm like, "Call me now." And after I text Greg from Tourism Economics, and he calls me, and I'm like, "Okay, what did we do wrong? Did I spell it out wrong? Did we not have the right subset?" And he goes, "Thought the same thing." He goes, "But look, and what I tell you what I love about Greg and Adam and Zeke and their entire leadership team there. They want to present solid numbers. I mean, they want to present true numbers, and I do too. And that's what the focus was here. And Greg said, "John, what you have to go back on and you have to look at is what is a qualified traveler." And he goes, "And the way we've always done your studies, a qualified traveler, is an attendee that comes in, outside of a radius of 50 miles. So let's start there, And he goes, "And when we start breaking down the attendance, of these different events, Oftentimes in many cases, that that number of people that aren't day tripping in, that are staying the night, but especially that are less than 50-mile radius of the event, ultimately we're not counting them because that money would have been spent in that economy had they gone to the event or not. And so that's a really, really important factor of the study. And I think that's the right factor of it. I think that that's accurate. So that's really where things, started start to add some clarity for me. And he said, look, think about these sports tourism events. He goes, John, you come from, BMX. Your events would have 1,000 attendees and about 3,000 spectators that came with them. What was your percentage of athletes that were from within 50 miles? I was like, 4% on average. He goes, that's the biggest delta of it all.
So do you have those numbers so we're not burying the lead? So what is that total impact of each of the categories, the participatory and the spectator sports?
Yeah, and very interesting. And what I did when I presented it at our symposium, and again, this is not statistically accurate. It's hard to do, but we only go in every other year increments. So I had 2003 numbers, and then I had 2004 numbers side by side. So again, it's not the same year comparison. So I wanted to qualify that for everybody. So, but it's just anecdotal fun, to try to share. Well, first and foremost, spectators, sports tourism, for 2024 generated 42.7 million hotel room nights. Again, not a small number. I mean, this is a great number. Direct spend generated $47.1 billion in spending and $114 billion in total economic impact. So now when we go in and we start doing some side-by-side comparisons, well, 2024 spectator room nights, 42.7 million. We shift that over, look at that participatory side, again, mostly youth and amateur, 73.5 million. So big delta.
That makes sense to me a little bit, though, because a lot of these participatory sports events are multi-day, right?
100%. That's
So I that's more room nights just inherently, even though the event might not be as big or have as far a reach, it's a volume game.
it
Yeah, but
is.
the scale is different, though, right? Because if you have a tournament with maybe 100 teams, you've maybe got, I don't know, 1,000 players, or what, depending on the sport, right? And then maybe 2, 3, 4,000 people total at that with spectators and whatnot. But it, I mean, if you have a football stadium, that's 80,000 people. So like it's an order of magnitude bigger. So that's where I think where I
100%
was surprised.
economies of scale. And I think traditional thinking, Stuart, just like you and I came into this, the way we were probably both thinking is that, this just couldn't scale out. But I will say this though. I mean, when you start to look at the raw number of youth and amateur sporting events that are happening nationwide in a single weekend, I mean, it's staggering. I mean, it is, again, and to Adam's point, when you think that those families are going there, and they're staying 4 and 5 nights at a time versus maybe only 1 or 2 nights because they're going to an NFL game or a spring training game, it starts to kind of make sense. And then you think about how many people there are coming locally. Also, too, when you look at the number of travelers, this is where to exactly what we're saying. If you look at spectator sports tourism travelers from the study, it showed in 2024 about 109.7 million of them. Now, if we look back again at 2023 in that last report that we've done on those youth and amateur, primarily sports tourism travelers, 204.9 million. So significantly more travelers. And I think too, when we think about that, all of us can think of friends of ours that through this year have children that are playing in soccer tournaments, that have hit the road to go to a lacrosse tournament or something, right? Think of your same friend set. How many of them have gone to an NFL game? How many of them went to the, you know what I mean? It's actually a much smaller subset. So it's not, when you start to dive into it, it's not surprising, but I think the spin number is what really gets, is really where it gets interesting. And if I dive into that, again, mentioned it earlier, 2023 direct spending from participatory sports tourism, 52.2 billion. 2024 direct spending from spectator sports travelers, 47.1 billion. So the spin gets a little closer, but still, youth amateur primarily sports in that those events that your DMOs are out there bidding on and winning and bringing to their destination, is winning the day. And I'm proud of that. I mean, that's the core of who and what we are at Sports ETA. That's the majority of what our memberships, and our destination members work on. And it just shows that they're winning and they're doing a great job with it.
Yeah, I mean, Myrtle Beach has been embracing sports tourism for a couple of decades now. We had a mayor at the time, John Rhodes. He's since passed away, but he had a vision that sports tourism was going to be a big deal before that was even called sports tourism. And so the community invested heavily in diamond-shaped and rectangular fields and a sports center and other stuff. And there's not a weekend goes by where we don't have multiple tournaments and competitions going on, from football and soccer and baseball and cheer and dance and basketball. It's like the lifeblood for us. And for a destination that was traditionally seasonal and that doesn't have a lot of spectator sports, we have a minor league baseball team. That's about it, right? We don't have a ton of spectator sports. The participatory sports has become the way we've broadened our shoulders. We've gone from a Memorial Day to Labor Day seasonality to now we're really a 10-month destination. It's still hard to get people to play outdoors in January here, but the rest of the year we're pretty much full on the weekends because primarily these participatory sports. And what I love about it, we've talked about this on the show before, is we're indoctrinating the next generation of vacationers to Myrtle Beach. These kids who are going to grow up coming to Myrtle Beach every year for 3 or 4 or 5 years with their travel teams. Where are they going to want to vacation when they get older and when they have kids? So where are they going to want to play tournaments with their kids when they're going to come back to Myrtle Beach? And so we see that repeat visitation of the folks coming. And then we're also seeing a correlation between people that come in the spring or the fall for some kind of sporting event, also coming back for their family vacation in the summertime as well. So it's a phenomenal, like, additive piece to the overall offering that Myrtle Beach has. And we're doubling down. We're adding more facilities.
Yeah, this has spurred several questions for me, and if you guys don't mind, I'm more ignorant on the sports side of destination marketing than I am on the leisure side. And so bear with me for a second, but my first question is, the numbers, John, that you're presenting here are pretty staggering, right? And then Stuart supports it by saying sports is really what took us from a Labor Day or a Memorial Day to Labor Day to a 10-month destination. What percentage of destination marketing budget does sports get compared to the other initiatives like leisure and maybe conventions and events? How does that percentage normally break out, and does the budget match the impact?
I can tell you how we approach it. Myrtle Beach doesn't have a lot of business base, so we look at things like meetings and groups and sports as a sort of table stakes base to be able to yield up on the leisure transient rate. So that's sort of how we approach it. So we look at it as a percentage and then we allocate appropriately. I think, it would depend on your destination. I think somewhere between five, well, it depends because we break up our budget between group sales and leisure anyway, but then a subset of group sales goes specifically to sports. So I think, 5 to 10% is probably appropriate for a destination like Myrtle Beach, because that's probably the base that is driving.
The economic impact of that matches the percentage of your budget that's allocated, is what you're saying. Okay.
It's a hot topic, Adam, in our space. And I'll tell you anecdotally over the
Let's
last
that's
year.
why we're here,
Yeah,
right?
no, it's a great one. I'll tell you what we've seen. When sports tourism won the day from the pandemic, there were so many destinations that literally survived because of sports
Yeah.
tourism. I tell the story, one of I you know my, maybe my claim to fame is we were the first governing body to come in and host a national tournament safely during the pandemic. And we did it in late 2000 in 20 in the heyday of it of the pandemic. And really it was a good event. And I remember talking to a GM of the hotelier saying, hey, we need a block of rooms. And the lady starts crying on the phone, telling me how thankful she was because of this event that they were going to be able to run a payroll run. So we showed how resilient we can be, and that the last thing families will cut is going to be participation, in sports. And since the pandemic, sports tourism is just growing and growing and growing. And look, local participations, we look at SFIA and their numbers, their top line report shows great numbers in terms of grassroots participation. We know when we see that as a strong growing number, that in 2 years, those athletes are going to become these sports tourism travelers. And we're seeing the room night consumption that so many of our DMOs are measuring that, like, man, look, sports is clicking up. We asked in our 2023 report in destinations, in the group sales side of things, how many of you is sports the number one hotel room night generator in your destination? Again, not leisure, group travel. 63% of our membership reported that sports was number one. Now, the rub in many, many destinations is that, again, sports tourism is that growing vertical. And that rub by a lot of our members is that they are under-resourced compared to the room nights that they generate, and that's all, and it's a constant battle. Now, this is where I go with it. And Stuart, literally, you couldn't have framed it up any better for us. What I argue to everybody when it comes to sports tourism and why you need deeper investment in this vertical is while I love conventions, I love business meetings. Okay. You take a 10-year-old and you go give them a world-class experience in Myrtle Beach, and you will have a repeat traveler for life. Growing up, I raced BMX and motocross. My favorite BMX track was in Milton, Florida. Motocross track was in Milton, Florida. And if we had a great race, Dad took us down to Navarre Beach on Sundays. I have three daughters. I've raised them in Phoenix, Arizona. San Diego is 5-hour drive, 45-minute flight. Do you know where I take them for vacation?
Florida.
Florida, Navarre Beach, Panhandle. And now the second point that I would tell you. Tell me another vertical where, and you just mentioned it, you said yourself that we're building new facilities. We're building new facilities, and we're not building them at just that park and rec standard, maybe it's just enough to meet the need. We're building them at national and world-class caliber facility that all of our citizens can utilize Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and we're going to pay for them with visitors Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We've literally seen communities come in and say, you know what, we're not a leisure travel destination. But we're gonna lean in on this because it checks these wonderful boxes of tourism, but funded with great facilities, and great opportunity. And it's enhancing that quality of life. It's enhancing civic pride. And then it's sowing those seeds, for future travelers who say this destination is wonderful. I mean, that's what our membership does every day, and we're proud of it. And we do. We feel like it's underserved, that our DMOs need to
Yeah.
step up and support it deeper.
Walk me
Yeah.
through the counter argument. Why wouldn't you invest more on the sports side, and why wouldn't you make it I guess congruent with the percentage of economic impact that it generates?
If I was answering, I'd love to hear Stuart's answer as well. Sometimes what we hear is, hey, room rate, corporate traveler, and just like you all, hey, if I'm pulling my Amex, rate's 289, no big deal. That's what the show rate is. That's what the show rate is. I'm going there with a family member, as a family, you've got a family of five. Yeah, I'm using points. I'm trying to be, economical. I'm looking at, so room rates, always the number one thing, that the sports
Okay.
tourism room rate can be significantly less, but we track that as well. Average ADR, across all, sports tourism was like 179 in August of this year, of last year. It's not an unhealthy room rate, when you look at an average over the entire year. So those type of things, I think those arguments are getting, the delta's getting a little less and less, but I'd love to hear Stuart's comment. I think he's probably much more well-versed than me.
Well, I don't know about that. I think you live and breathe this stuff, but one of the challenges, Adam, is that it takes a lot of investment up front to become a serious contender in sports tourism. Like, you have to have community commitment and often public dollars to be invested in facilities before you can really play in this game. So once I think once a destination has gotten to the point where they're reaping the fruits of their labor, it's an easy sell to say we're going to continue to double down on this. And there's a lot of destinations, especially smaller destinations. It's a great way to differentiate yourself. Like, I think of places close to us, like Rock Hill, South Carolina, that has really embraced sports tourism, participatory sports tourism. And so you got to get community alignment. You got to get people to buy into the value of developing the facilities, and you got to get the community to understand that on the weekends, the community doesn't benefit directly from these. They're benefiting indirectly from the revenue that's coming on. I think the argument, though, that sort of counters some of this, I mean, there's so many case studies. But one of the things that didn't surprise me, but is clear in the report that you guys have, John, is that it's not just room revenue, right? Room revenue is actually not the number one piece of the pie. When you look at the other costs, like transportation's usually number one, but then you've got like restaurants and attractions typically are generating more revenue than the accommodation itself. You think about it, I go, like if my kids was travel soccer players, I'd go to a new location for 2 or 3 days, right? It's usually they got game two games on a Friday, or two games on a Saturday and one on a Sunday, two if they make the final. I'm usually going up on a Friday night. We're eating out. We're finding something to do that evening. They probably got a couple of games early in the day, and then we got the rest of the day to go find stuff to do. We're eating, we're trying to find activities. We're using it as a vacation, right? So we're dumping a ton of money beyond the actual the stay into that economy. And the data bears that out. So you've got to make a broader argument than just heads and beds. I think that's where people get tripped up. They're focused on the heads and beds. This is helping your local restaurants, your attractions, in your grocery stores, gas stations. Like it goes far beyond just the accommodation.
So let's just kind of think that through for a second. So if the argument from a hotelier is, well, I don't want you to shift budget towards this thing that hasn't been proven or whatever, it's, hey, listen, we know that we can maintain room nights and keep your hotel full, but on top of that, we're going to have enough economic impact for the other things to make sure that the people that come stay at your hotel have a better and better experience as time goes on. And so it's, we should shift budget this way because it's going to benefit the people that stay in your hotel by giving them a better experience for the long term because the economic impact is greater.
Yeah, you're playing 4D chess at that point, right? It's a broader conversation about just quality of life of the community, the residents, but also quality of experience for the visitor. That's what this
Absolutely.
brings.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, we love it. I think there's no turning back from our perspective. And I'll tell you what, during the pandemic, you brought that up, John. We saw our neighbors to the north in North Carolina really took a very different approach than South Carolina did. We were one of the first states to reopen. We were the first major destination to reopen. We'd like to say we took a nap during COVID. We took a lot of heat from that early on, like for being called reckless and all kinds of stuff. But what we also did was we took a lot of market share from North Carolina. We had a lot of sporting events, especially that were on the phone freaking out saying, hey, we have a tournament schedule for North Carolina in the next couple of months and they won't let us have it. Can we come to Myrtle Beach? And we were like, heck yeah, we'd love to have you, And I'm proud to say we've kept almost all of those, almost all of the ones that moved from somewhere else and came here. They're now coming back to Myrtle Beach every year. Because we offer that great experience beyond off the field
Right.
experience as well,
And it, look, there were several case studies like that. I mean, it was so fascinating during that time. I tell everybody the most challenging work I've ever done in my life, but also the most rewarding. Oklahoma's a great example. Oklahoma, I mean, just came in and went gangbusters and grabbed events. And a lot of times it were these events that people may never have thought of Oklahoma City. They never may have thought of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And they went in there, and to your point, Stuart, they haven't left. They've stayed. I mean, they enjoyed it. They embraced the community. They saw the love the community gave them. They saw the commitment to sports tourism, and they've built this massive book of business. So a lot of communities like that that made those tough choices, really, it's transformed, their sports tourism efforts. And I love it. One of the things I always do too, when anytime I have a chance to speak at any of the conferences, I have a great slide. And it looks like, back into the old, days of the original Olympics, and it shows like some gladiators kind of, it's this horrible picture of the gladiators like going through the streets. And I start, and it offends most people, but I look at it, I'm like, okay, guys, let's level set. Can we all just agree that sports is the originator of all of tourism? And everybody removes, because there's like four sports people out of 400, and you're all like, ah. So if you ever have a chance to see me keynote, I've spoiled it, but that's what I usually love to start with, and
love
just
it.
hopefully get people thinking a little different.
That's
Love that.
hilarious. No, I really love it. Were there, well, actually, one point back to Oklahoma City. They have a really good economic method to create facilities. So they have a tax there specifically for product development. And that's, I think it's created billions of dollars of regeneration, not just in sports tourism, but in other assets within their space too, spectator sports arenas and stuff too. So they as a community came together and said, hey, if we invest in this, if we create this tax specifically for this purpose, we believe it will yield great results. And in large part, that's why Oklahoma City has become sort of a top-tier destination at this point. It certainly wasn't that 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, like they're this great I example. I mean, Olympics in the softball for softball is going to happen and occur in Oklahoma City, not in LA. The LA 2028 Olympics for softball is gonna. I mean, who would have ever thought of that? You look at Tulsa, Oklahoma. We actually just hosted our symposium there, which a town that just blew people away when they got to come in there and love it. We did our opening party about it at a facility that I'm keenly aware of, that I was on the tip of the spear of helping get opened, but the USA BMX National Headquarters Museum and National Training Center, and the city of Oklahoma had hosted the championships of BMX racing every single year, the city of Tulsa, and they wanted to invest deeper. They wanted to really submit this sport as a newly minted Olympic sport. So they said, "Hey, we want to help build your headquarters here. You know, why are you in Chandler, Arizona? Come to the center of the country. Let's build you a facility." They invested $26 million and built an arena that's a football field wide by a football field and a half long that has an Olympic level, you know, BMX track in it, a museum, and their offices. And so you've had families that have moved that have these up and coming potential Olympians to the city of Tulsa, you know, to stay there. They're hosting almost once a month some type of major national tournament that's of substance. But one of the greatest byproducts is when you talk to their sales team, when they close out a site visit of another organization, if they've got gymnastics in, if they've got anybody in, the last stop on the tour is that facility. And they
That's
walk them into it and they say, these guys were here with us and they committed to us for 25 years. On the 26th year, this is what we built them. What a powerful sales statement. And then what an asset for the community. You know, so I think that unique thinking within sports tourism and that commitment to it, especially on a destination that may not have a great leisure travel, you know, opportunities, it can be profound and it can really change a community.
Well, and John, that event was fantastic in Tulsa. I appreciated the opportunity to be there, and Tulsa's unique in a lot of ways. I think their funding model is really interesting as well, and it allows them a lot more flexibility to invest in some of those things. So, yeah, great choice on that event, and it's pretty amazing. I did not expect the event to be as significant as it was, to be as mass attended as it was, and Tulsa was clearly a great destination for it.
Yeah,
So
thanks,
I
Adam.
guess by coming on this show that John, you're contractually obligated to bring that event to Myrtle Beach pretty soon for the next ones.
You know, Jonathan Paris there at Myrtle Beach is one of our board members and a dear friend. Him and Taylor, they do a yeoman's job, you know, at
Yeah, they
bringing
do.
events there. So, yeah, you know, one of these days, we definitely need to get one of the big events. But yeah, Adam, it was a great event. We had 1,100 attendees. We facilitated over 20,000 B2B appointments. You know, if you're in sports tourism of any destination size, and we had every event you could possibly imagine, from international events to again, some smaller, if you're a smaller community, Sports ETA Symposium is a special event.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
great.
John, any final thoughts, takeaways, any other surprises that came out of these reports? And then also where can people get these reports if they want to? Are they public or do they buy them from you? I'm not even sure.
You know, you can see the executive summary. Those are available to the public. You go to sportsETA.org. You can find them there, which has a lot of the information in it. The deep dives are, those are a member resource that we
Yeah.
provide. So again, anybody that could be listening to this podcast, if you're not already a member, let us know and we'll share with you how you can get that done. But Stuart, the data is so interesting. And what we can't wait to see is, we just can't wait to run this report again next year. And really, as we see these major events come in, you know, to watch that bump. And that's, again, why I started off the conversation. That's why we did this, to see what the lift would be and be able to be on a part of that measuring stick. And we just feel like it's an honor. It's an honor to serve our members, whether it's our rights holder members that are putting on the events, that own the events, and our national governing bodies, or whether it's our destinations, you know, we love what we do. We feel like it's meaningful. We're passionate people, and sporting events are great. And it's just so fun. Our association has grown 20% in the last 2 years. The event Adam
Awesome.
went to, with 350 attendees, it was their first time. And so many of them there are new hires in this industry that were brought on to bring in sporting events to their town or to support them. And that's the great news is if that's what your efforts are, you come in, you become a part of the Sports ETA family, we'll love on you and we'll show you the way.
Yeah, there's blueprints, right? And you guys are the experts, and you can certainly share that with anyone. I mean, we love the partnership. We appreciate what you've done for us and what you continue to do for the community. It's phenomenal. Thank you so much. Adam, any final words of wisdom from you? Any takeaways from this?
I would say that sports tourism is probably a side of destination marketing that I'm less well versed and less familiar with. And so this has been a great learning experience for me. John, getting to know you over the last couple of years has been a ton of fun. I appreciate you interacting with our content and like I said, having me out to the event. I am of the opinion that any destination who has not explored, especially rural, I think there's a lot of rural destinations where sports could completely change the future of the destination. And if they haven't looked into how it could, I think that's something that needs to be done yesterday because I talk about building generations of visitation and building traditions in a destination. And like you illustrated with that example of going to Florida, John. I don't know if there's a better way to do that than this participatory sports tourism. So I would love to see more destinations get involved and explore it instead of just spending money the traditional way after the leisure traveler and competing with their larger competitors with the same strategy they have.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to your point, it's an annuity, right? If you invest in the facilities,
Well said.
you're going to have residuals that come on for decades. And there are so many case studies out there of how this has been transformational. My wife and I went with our son. He plays high school soccer. They did a tournament in Fort Mill recently, and it's a very small town. It's in the suburbs of Charlotte, but it's like sports has transformed that area. They've got really two or three kind of entertainment hubs now. They've redeveloped the downtown. And when you go down there, it's full of kids that have their jerseys on, right? They've been playing soccer or whatever. It's a lot of fun. Now, John, we've been kind of easy on you, but I'm going to give one constructive criticism that hopefully you take in the spirit it's intended. Please, for the love of God, sync up these reports so they're the same year moving forward. So you don't have
100%.
the criticism that is inevitably going to come from naysayers, which is, well, it's not apples to apples because inflation, yada 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 yada. So
Yeah,
just
absolutely. That
get
will
them
be done
synced
next
up.
year.
Awesome. Thanks. Hey, Adam, before we go, man, got to tell you, I'm excited. We got another
Yeah.
one. We've been telling people if you leave a review on Apple, then we'll read it out. Now, I do also want to say we've gotten a few comments on Spotify. You can't leave a review per se, but you can comment on an individual episode. We have a handful of those too. We'll get into those at another
Yeah, did you
later
ever
point.
think that we would have more reviews than we have time to read?
I know, man. It's like the destination is taking off. It's real. So we got a new review. Let's read it out, and then hopefully it'll encourage other people to leave a review.
Well, and the cool thing, there's two cool things about this review. One, it's not my mom. And two, it's not in a British accent. And so both of those things are really, really cool. Let me go ahead and read this. This is from our friend Nate. And Nate has been a longtime listener of both the Destination Marketing Podcast and this show. And Nate says, the headline is Five Stars, One of My Favorites. I just wanted to say that this is one of my favorite destination marketing podcasts. The format of the podcast really lends itself to seeing all sides of an issue. The show's a great resource for everyone in the destination marketing industry. I never miss an episode. Stu's News and the Jingle is definitely one of the best segments in all of podcasting. He included the jingle there, and I want to make sure you're aware of that, Stuart. And then he signs off with Destination, exclamation
Nice.
point.
It's a
So
thing. We made
it's a
fetch
thing.
happen, man.
Fetch happened, and Gretchen Wieters couldn't be more excited.
Exactly. Now, I'm going to give that a 1-star review for giving you more credit towards the jingle. Like it's unbelievable. I feel like the world is turning on me.
I
I don't
think
know what to say.
Nate is just, listen, he's intelligent, he's capable, he's forward-thinking, and obviously is one of the smartest people in the industry just based on that review alone.
Yeah. This is sort of backfired because I originally set it up so people would mock you and you'd have to read out things mocking you, and it's flipped. They're like sycophants. So if you want to leave a review, please go to Apple Podcasts, leave a review. Or if you do leave a note on Spotify, just shoot us a direct message on LinkedIn or something like that, and we'll go check it out. But we appreciate everyone in the destination listening. You're all part of our Desties. Thank you, John, our brand new Destie that's joined us today. John, if they want to find you, what's the best way to do that?
Certainly, email is always great, John, at sportsETA.org, and of course on LinkedIn and our website, sportsETA.org as well. So,
Great. Love to have you back anytime. So
yeah.
whenever you have more data or a new top burning topic, we went real easy on you this time, but next time we might make you run the gauntlet a little harder. But
I look forward
Adam,
to it.
where can they find you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn or on Tourism IQ or Adam at thebrandrevolt.com. And I just want to say, Stuart hates that these reviews are fun for me to read. So if you're going to leave a review, give me a little criticism. Help Stuart feel better because I know it's been hard for him.
Yeah, it's tough. It's been a hard week too. My beloved Manchester United lost in Europe. I'm on a downward spiral. So bring me back up with some good criticism of Adam. That would
I
help me
thought it
out.
was Manchester City that you root for.
It's just wrong. Thank you all for listening. Please tune in again next week. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody.
You're done. I didn't. You threw me so much, I didn't even leave my contact info, but thank you.
I'm sorry.